What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 224 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We have a fantastic episode for you tonight. We are on week 2 out of 3 of Bungie just giving us absolutely the meatiest wobs that we have had in quite some time. This week it's not the most exciting of things, but it is some good stuff. They talked about armor, they talked about mods, they talked about some exotic armor changes, some of which are pretty big for the PvE landscape, others of which look potentially pretty fun for the PvP landscape. Now, personally, I'm not as excited about this as I was the subclass changes last week, and I'm not as excited about this as we are the weapon changes next week, and we have extra reason to be excited. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the episode, but first, let's get the introductions out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercles, joined tonight by Kit Gacha. And how are you doing this evening, Kit?
Oh, doing pretty well. Can't complain. It's things are finally slowing down for me on the personal side of things, so I've been able to get a lot more Destiny in this week than I had been playing, which I am really enjoying. How about you, man?
Yeah, I'm still mid-audit, but I played a good bit of Destiny last week for Iron Banner. Played really a ton of Iron Banner. Very much enjoying myself. And now things are kind of just winding down. I've obviously played the epilogue this week in-game, which was nice. It's nice to see a story like that wrap up in-game. That was pretty fun.
That was cool. Yeah, I enjoyed that.
But I think like most people, we're kind of just waiting for these TWABs, waiting with bated breath. Like the TWAB is almost bigger than like the what's happening in-game these last couple of weeks. And we're all waiting for the Witch Queen reveal in later August. So really excited about all that. But yeah, we got some pretty big news this week, didn't we? I don't know if I don't think we're going to say anything about it on Twitter until probably day of, but the Discord is aware of it. And now you, our loyal listeners, are also aware of it. We are actually going to have a special guest on next week.
Yes, we are.
When we do the Weapon Sandbox, Season 15 Sandbox preview, when we talk about the TWAB, we're actually going to have Chris Proctor from Bungie on. And he's going to be kind of going over the TWAB with us. And then at the end of the episode, he's going to be doing a little question and answer. So we are very, very excited about that. I can't tell you how thrilled I am that this is happening. You know, huge shout out to them to Bungie and their PR team and Chris for taking time out of his day to come on with us. And I can't imagine a better time to have someone from Bungie on than to discuss the weapon sandbox changes that are going to be upcoming in season 15.
Yeah. Yeah. No joke. I mean, this is just a huge, huge sandbox adjustment that they're making. So I can only imagine that the weapon changes we see are going to be commensurate with these other TWABs, if not even more so. It's going to be truly a pleasure to have somebody on so that rather than speculate about what some of these things mean, rather than try to work it out based on the numbers that we know and guess at, we can just ask. And Chris has shown himself on firing range to be a pretty articulate and helpful guy. So I am super, super excited to talk to him. I feel like there are going to be some bombs dropped, and I can't wait for it.
You know, we told you guys that that we would maybe one day consider having a guest on. And I think we probably held out for about the absolute best guest we could have gotten onto the show. I think we held off bringing a third person on, and now I don't know that we're ever going to be able to bring a third person on again after this. I think we might peak with our first guest, and we might just never have another one after this, unless it's Chris coming back for round two. But we'll see how that goes. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We just want to let you guys know at the front. I know that there's a bunch of people who probably skip the front of the episode because we do the housekeeping. So we'll wrap back around at the end of the episode. We'll mention it there as well in case you did skip to the end. And then, yeah, the Discord has already provided us with some really great questions for the Q&A at the end. Excited about that. But with all that out of the way, I guess we should jump right into the housekeeping. How's the Patreon looking, Gutch?
Well, it is moderately busy. You had actually sent me a message, I thought, from somebody that pledged this past week, and now I cannot, for the life of me, find that message. So, we're just gonna pretend that it never happened, and go right into some thank yous. We do have 4 new patrons to say thank you to this week. Unfortunately, I've only got a Discord tag for one of them. It doesn't look like I have any messages from the rest of them. And I don't see any Discord tags. So I hope that they join up. And if they do, I'll have to shout them out at that time. But I do want to say a big thank you to new patron Wave. So this patron would like to be thanked under the name Onalu, which is an excellent name, I think. We will be sure to wave in the Discord and say hi. Our other three patrons will remain anonymous for now, as I don't like to throw real names out there without permission. But we deeply appreciate you. You know who you are, and I hope that we see you in the Discord, or, you know, say hi on Twitter, hit us up out in the wild, in the Crucible, and let us know who you are so we can thank you properly. So that's the news. Let's talk about the oldies and the goodies. That's right. It's sponsor time. So, as I do, in just no particular order, just whatever order their names jump out to me in, we're going to go ahead and throw some thank yous out. So, big, massive shout out to Askey and Monk, Deacon, ZensoCal, The Shazzle, A Solitary Bird, and ConquerKing420. These guardians are incredibly generous with the podcast, and their support really just goes a massive long way to paying for our hosting, paying for new microphones, paying for all the nice things that we use to keep bringing this podcast to your ears, and in fact, to make it sound so much better. I feel like we've probably said it before, but I think in light of the difficulties we've had over the last few months with working out presets and audio things, I think just a special additional thank you to Mr. Sutton is probably in order. Mr. Sutton is a patron, and he's also been incredibly generous with his time and knowledge in helping us to fine-tune our audio so that it sounds just as lovely as it possibly can. So we really appreciate that. As we do, the generosity and input that we get from all of our patrons, the Patrons Lounge is a hopping place. And that news that we shared earlier is news that they got first. That's one of the perks of being a patron. When something special happens, you're first in line to know. And you're first in line to do things like ask questions, give input on, you know, what we might talk about on the podcast when such input is requested. So it's a place that's great to be. And it's just one of the ways that we like to say thank you to those who are so generous with us financially. So thank you so much to all of them. And that, I believe, is that still coming in under 10 minutes.
Well, not quite, because we actually got three reviews. It's going to be a little bit weird because the first two actually really cracked me up. So the first two are the shortest two reviews we've ever gotten in the history of getting reviews.
Okay.
The first one is from iPhone45. Mm-hmm. He says, the mountaintop, 5 stars, top notch. That's literally it.
Love it.
Beautiful, short, to the point. Only surpassed by the shortest review we've ever gotten from uninteresting guy who says, review, 5 stars, slick. And that's literally it. So those were two out of the three reviews, and I read those and I cracked up. And then the third review is probably the longest review we've ever gotten. So I was like, wow, this is really just a week of opposites. We got the two shortest reviews we've ever gotten, and then we got one of the longest reviews we've ever gotten. So this third one now is a novel, and it is beautiful. It's from Kletchum. He says, Destiny and Star Wars fans rejoice, 5 stars. I have a decent amount of podcasts I listen to at work, but anytime there's a new Massive Breakdown episode, it takes priority. I have been on the biggest Star Wars high of my life, and because of this podcast, it has added more fuel to the fire. I've listened to roughly 7 canon books, including Dark Disciple, which is amazing. Thanks for the recommendation, Merc. And rewatched the entirety of Rebels. Can't wait for the coverage on the show of that show on Beneath Twin Suns and the Clone Wars. Oh, wait, this is a Destiny podcast, too. Good thing I also love Destiny. It helps me decide what guns I want to keep and motivates me to try more things in the Crucible. I've often felt directionless in PvP, but thanks to this podcast and their excellent recommendations of good weapons, loadouts, and playstyles, I have had more fun and, dare I say, I've become a decent player in the Destiny sandbox. Amongst the fun content, Merc and Kit help me feel more motivated and able to pursue my passions as I see their continued success and support from the Destiny community while they get to talk about video games in a galaxy far, far away. Long story short, the podcast is good and the hosts have excellent, well-thought-out opinions in both Destiny and Star Wars, and that's a win-win in my eyes. So, damn, if that isn't one of the best reviews we've ever had. Absolutely fantastic. He knows all the buttons to push, right? Compliments our Star Wars knowledge, compliments Destiny, compliments our opinions? My God.
I feel deeply flattered. I'm blushing a little bit right now. It's a good thing that I've gotten a lot of tan going on this summer, because I'd be beet red otherwise. Wow. I mean, I appreciate all those reviews, but I can't say that if I had to pick a favorite child, I might not pick the longer one.
We appreciate all reviews.
We do.
But we just extra special appreciate the long ones. But at the same time, the fact that someone went out of their way to leave us a review that was just one word, let me know that like they really probably didn't want to leave a review, but they were like, you know what, I'm gonna do it for these guys. And in that case, it's almost like, you know, because you didn't want to do it, I appreciate it that much more.
That's true.
Thank you very much for doing that. I know you didn't want to. We're going to give you the shout out. Remember, if you guys would like to leave us a review, we will read it out. We'll give you a shout out in the housekeeping at the beginning of every episode. So please do it. It helps us out immensely on Apple Podcasts, but you can also leave us a review anywhere you'd like. If you are international, please notify us on Discord or Twitter or something, because we have to wait for an aggregator to pick those up. And so we will not always get it in a timely manner unless you let us know.
That's right. Well, you make a good point. Each review is special in its own way. And I have to say, I feel like has it just been a couple of weeks since we've read out a review?
No, I think we've had one each of the last two episodes.
I guess it's just been a while since we had a pile come in.
Yeah, it's been a while since we had like multiple reviews. It's been a while since we had a very, very long one. So I'm very appreciative of that.
Well, this is a good week. This is a banner week.
Good week for patrons. Good week for reviews. Yeah, it's been a nice week.
Good week for news for the podcast with Chris Proctor coming on. I'm just gonna keep name dropping him periodically. Just
people, for the people who are tuning back in at the 10-minute mark after they think the housekeeping is done.
Yeah. People aren't even gonna know. They're gonna be like, who? Oh, he works at Bungie. Right. Okay. There you go.
Not just works at Bungie, but the weapons lead for Bungie.
Yes.
So, I mean, if we had to pick anyone to come on to talk to us about weapons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm just putting myself in the shoes of somebody who maybe doesn't know. They'd be like, oh, it's somebody from Bungie. Okay, that's going to be good. So it is going to be good. We're very excited. We're still under 15 minutes.
We did pretty well as far as it goes. We're not over 20 yet. And I think next week we'll do the housekeeping at the end of the episode so that, you know, nobody's tuning in next week to hear us talk about our housekeeping.
That's true.
Push that to the end of the episode. Let Chris get out of here. Don't want to waste any of his time. So we'll think about that. But
maybe he wants to read a review out. I don't know.
You know, I don't know. I don't know that he does. I don't know that he does. But yeah, so what we do have to talk about today, though, outside of the housekeeping, Bungie came at us with a TWAB. They showed us the champion mods, which is pretty neat. I think they forgot one. I think they admitted to that.
It was something about maybe a sword and overload. I don't know. It's, you know, we'll find out, right?
Which is weird because it's like, do we really only have one anti-barrier mod this upcoming season? It's just auto rifles?
It looks like.
Because I'm pretty sure they told us that they were going to be, like, didn't they tell us that they were going to be buffing 3 sets of weapons in PvE? And it was the precision weapons and machine guns, right? It was like scout rifles, handhands, and machine guns. They've told us in the past that, like, they were going to do some work on those.
Yeah.
And Am I correct in that none of those have a champion mod for them at all? So it's like, oh, great, you buffed them, and now we can't use them in in-game PvE content, but we appreciate it anyways.
That would appear to be the case, yes. Yep. It's a good thing I've just been using my 7th Seraph Carbine.
Just keep right on using it. Those 450 autos, man, underrated.
Just got to keep on plugging away.
We got a good bit of news today. And like last week, I think almost all of it was positive. Controller players in particular are probably rejoicing. Traction, the mod, which allows you to turn faster while you're sprinting, is actually going away. And they've just added a straight up sprint turn speed scaler option. It goes from 0.3 to 0.8, right? So you still are going to have a little bit of a decrease in turning speed when you're running, but you can now pick how much of a decrease you want. And they've just entirely removed the traction mod. And then in addition to that, they added additional controller sensitivity options. It used to only go from 1 to 10. 1 to 10 stays the same, but they've now added an 11 to 20 over that and added an ADS sensitivity modifier. So you can either make your guns more sensitive when you're ADS or less sensitive, which is pretty crazy. So they're given controller, the mouse and keyboard treatment. I got to say straight up, I'm going to stay exactly as I am right now. I have traction actually throws me off like an immense amount. Like I'm so used to the slow turning speed that Destiny has when you sprint that when I use traction, I like way over rotate during my turns. Like I do a lot of like jumping and turning in the air and then landing and sliding, and traction like entirely throws off my game. And similarly, like I'm already at 10 sensitivity, and I am sometimes when I'm playing, when I'm not like on my game and I'm not warmed up, I'm like all over the place. So I don't know that I'm going to try out the 11 to 20 range, but you know, more power to the people who will.
You know, I think I'm going to mess around with the scaler option. I am a traction user. It is just on my legs. I do have a set without for PvE, but on my PvP pants, it's just there as a default. I just work around it. But I'm glad now that I can actually reclaim that slot and put it hopefully to some better use. So I'll mess around with the sprint turn speed scaler. I gotta say I'm at 35. I don't know if I've got the reflexes to go much higher on sensitivity than I am. I think I usually play at 9 or 10. I haven't messed with it in a while. Whatever it's been at has been good. But I'm tempted to see if I can push it to 11 just for kicks and see how it feels. So I don't know. We'll see. The ADS sensitivity modifier. Boy, I wish that was something that I could like change on the fly, because it just really probably depends on what I'm doing. So I don't know. I'll have to mess around with all of this, to be honest. But
I've
it's
heard
cool.
The suggestion for ADS sensitivity is you crank your normal sensitivity way up, like to 20, and then you crank your ADS sensitivity way down, and you will end up with like if you're playing like 10 sensitivity right now, like you'll end up with the same ADS sensitivity that you're at right now, but you'll be able to turn and look way faster when you're hip firing. So I've heard some interesting stuff like doing that. I'm not entirely sure how it's going to work out. I'm going to have to experiment with a little bit on my own, but I'm such a muscle memory player that I'm always worried about changing anything.
Yeah.
And like just, especially because like I was playing the other night and I was using fusions for a good bit and Iron Banner, and fusions are just an entirely different play style than my like Le Monarch Messenger play style. To the point, especially in Iron Banner, I can pretty much just use the fusion with double scavengers, which we'll talk about in a bit. Like not even pay attention to my primary at all. And I like went back to my Le Monarch, and like I've been preaching to a lot of people like, oh, Le Monarch is so easy. The Messenger is so easy. Like it's such an easy combo. I remembered what it was like to have to aim after coming from a fusion, going back to Le Monarch and like actually having to hit shots. And my sensitivity was like all over the place, because with a fusion, it's an entirely different style of aim. You're so much closer to the target. You have so much a bigger hitbox. Like you're not aiming for the head at all. and having to then go back to the Monarch, which is such a precision gun, that I was just like, oh my God, I suck at this. And yeah. I had to like relearn how to use that again. And so I'm very hesitant to change anything because I'm such a muscle memory player that I'm always concerned that like if I throw off my sensitivity by even a little bit, I'm gonna have to like relearn how to play these styles.
I've had that same issue occasionally with Le Monarch Messenger. If I take a break and do something else, like I've been doing a lot of The Last Word and Orwing's Maul lately. Don't hate me. And it is very different because that's an entirely hip fire loadout. I don't aim down sights unless someone is absolute and really far away. And then occasionally I will ADS with The Last Word just so that I can actually hit them at some absurd distance and get that last chunk. But that's like once every 3 or 4 games. I mean, it never comes up. I flipped back to Le Monarch Messenger and woof, that first match was just like, what am I doing? Why am I even playing this game?
Yeah, you're like, wait, how do I hit a headshot again? What is going on here? Yeah. And then I realized like, oh, it actually probably is pretty difficult to pick up like a bow precision primary playstyle if it's not something that you're used to. And then I'm like, the only reason I think I transitioned to it as well as I did was because I had previously been playing Symmetry Messenger, mm-hmm. right? So I've been playing 2 precision primaries and then I transitioned to Le Monarch and I think it was really easy. But I think had I come to it from using Bastion or from using Exile's Curse a lot, I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much. And I wonder if, like, I'm constantly pushing this, and we'll talk about it at the end of the episode because we pulled the numbers again, usage numbers. We want to go over one more time before the next Sandbox patch shakes everything up. And, like, I thought for sure that, like, the Monarch was going to climb up and people were going to realize how good it is. And, like, it hasn't. It's just, like, stayed entirely flat. So I'm starting to see now that like, oh, maybe it's not quite as easy to pick up as I kind of thought it was at first.
I don't know. I think most people either just don't know about the blinting playstyle with it or else have a really bad couple of matches and just say it's not for me.
Or they don't play Hunter because Oathkeepers with Hunter makes it like way, way easier than it does on Warlock or on Titan.
Oh, yeah, yeah, absolutely. The playstyle is not really viable in the same way if you're not playing it on a Hunter. Absolutely.
But come on, who doesn't play Hunter, though?
I mean, know that.
Based on how long it takes me to get those, like, kill 5 Warlocks and kill 5 Titans bounties done in PvP versus my kill 5 Hunters, like, my kill 5 Hunters is, like, the first 5 kills I get in control. It's, like, 5 Hunters. My kill 5 Warlocks one, sometimes I'll go, like, multiple games and I won't get the kill 5 Warlocks one, which is indicative of the state of PvP. But
I don't think I've ever had that issue, but maybe you're in a higher skill bracket than me.
I hope not in control.
I feel like Hunters are at the very top and the very bottom of the skill bracket. Anyway.
People who want a normal jump and people who want a normal jump up with Stompies.
Yes.
The people who play Hunters. But
that's what anyways. I just said, right? Anyway, yeah. Talk about super regenerating exotics.
You know what I realized looking at this is I was like, wow, Warlocks have a lot of super regenerating exotics. And they gave them one more. They already had 3. They gave them a 4th one. And it was like Hunters have 1 and Titans have 1. And that's it.
Hunters have 2. Hunters have Orpheus Rig, which is not not appearing in this film.
Oh, yeah, it's not mentioned here.
Because it got this treatment like 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, and now they're just bringing everything else to its level. So basically they said we want to standardize it. They said that in PvE content, these are pretty much like you must have them. And so they just said, look, we want to standardize how much you can get back. Like it's too much. It's too strong. So they basically capped all of them at 50%, right? None of them can give you any more than 50% back. Shards of Galanor actually got a little bit of a buff and now increases the amount of super granted for hit. So it will be easier to get to that 50%, but you can't get quite as high. Ursa Furiosa, they just capped it at 50. Skull of Dairam Kara, same thing as Shards of Galanor. They increased the amount of super refunded per kill, but capped it at 50. Phoenix Protocol, capped at 50. Storm Dancer's Brace previously did not refund super. It just increased the damage of your Storm Trance for every kill that you got. Now it also could potentially refund up to 50% of your super energy after super ends based on the number of kills. And then Geomag Stabilizers, they have removed the sprint to top off your super option, which is a very much needed nerf. Geomag Stabilizers were incredibly frustrating to play against.
Thank goodness. Yeah. Like, if the number of Chaos Reach, the number of times Chaos Reach kills me goes down by, like, just, like, 50%, that would be awesome.
Didn't they also say that they're changing? Yeah, they're nerfing Chaos Reach's, like, AoE at the end of it, too. So I'm hoping that with these two changes combined, like, the amount of Chaos Reach that we see falls precipitously. Because, you know, I don't know what it is. Sometimes things are just, like, really annoying, but if I never get killed by another Chaos Reach 1.5 minutes into the match when I'm behind a wall, like, I can be entirely happy with that.
Yeah. You know, I think it's still going to be a useful super because you can still cancel it early. And so there's, I mean, that's a really nice benefit in terms of being able to use it, get a kill, save it back up. But yeah, if it could just not be such an overwhelmingly positive choice. I don't want to keep saying bad things about it. It's fine. I respect the people were doing what was there. You know, it was in the game, so it's fine with me. But
you gotta hammer the outliers down. You can't have Chaos Reach pop in.
Yeah,
you know, 45 seconds into a match, and then and then popping it again immediately after that. You know, it's like, dude, the amount I'm running, you know, stasis. So of course my super comes back slower. So right, like a good match, I'll get three supers in a control match or an Iron Banner match. And I see dudes with Geomag Stab, Chaos Reaches getting like six supers in a match. I'm like, dude, oh my God.
Yeah.
I will not miss that. Not at all. But they reworked some exotics, and I was really excited about the first one. I was like reading it and getting more and more excited. And I like read the last thing, and they were like suppressed reporter. I was like, fuck yes. And then I read the next line, and I was like, no. I went from the highest of high to the lowest of lows, right? So it's the Bombardiers. The bomb now has a secondary effect based on your subclass type, right? Blind for arc, which is, you know, nice. It's like a flashbang grenade. Burn for solar, right? It's like an incendiary grenade. Slow for stasis, it's like the dodge slow, right? And then suppress for void. And I read suppress for void, and I was like, oh my fucking God. I was like, I'm going to put these things on. I'm going to switch back to my Night Stalker. I was like, it's going to be the greatest thing ever. Like, I'm never going to be touched by a super again. And then it rolls down. It's like the suppression will not affect a Guardian Super. I was like, oh,
yeah,
my heart. I was thinking the other day, I played a match and I went 20-0 to start the match, right? I got killed by a super. I was like, okay, well, that makes sense. Like, it's about super time. I respawn. I immediately got killed by a second super. I was like, well, that's frustrating. Respawn, got killed by two more supers. And I was like, fuck this goddamn game. I literally went 20-0 and got killed by four supers in a row. And I read this and I was like, it's time. Like, I was saying that I would give up my super to never be killed by a super. And they promised it to me, and then they took it away with a little note down at the bottom. It broke my heart.
Yeah, that would have been too strong, to be honest.
I think we all know that.
Yeah. So the Bombardiers is going to go from, I think, being like mildly entertaining but not super useful in PvE to being possibly a tier one choice in PvE for hunters. Being able to dodge and blind or slow or suppress enemies just almost instantly is incredibly useful. The burn, probably less so, but
depends, right? Is it capable of one-shotting if they take full blast damage from the bomb and the burn? Will it kill them?
Well,
if it can,
we'll have to see. Yeah,
if it can, that's pretty useful. I think blind is going to be real good with the arc striders considering the buff they're getting.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be fantastic. Slow, I actually feel like it's like the least useful. I mean, I guess technically you could pair it with like the slow dodge and like double slow people, but Like, I don't feel like that's entirely, I don't remember the last time I saw someone wearing the slow dodge. And then the suppress for void, like.
The slow dodge will work fairly well because you'll dodge, it'll instantly slow them, and then they'll get hit by the explosion, they'll get slowed again, then you can shoot them. So that's actually not a terrible combo, but that's more of like a PvP thing that you would do to just like meme on people rather than something that would be, I think, be really useful in PvE. You were going to say about suppress though?
Well, suppress, I mean, it's like, it's pretty useful because it's going to be really nice to be able to like prevent people from using their abilities around you. But I just can't get over my disappointment of the fact that it's not just blatantly overpowered and allowing me to shut down every single super that ever comes near me. Like, well, I would, yeah.
Yeah, it's so the bombardiers are flat out much better. This is a huge change for what was essentially a very gimmicky exotic. I enjoyed messing around with the bombardiers in low level PvE when they first came out, and I quickly got bored and moved on. This really has me taking a second look. Next up, though, is Graviton Forfeit. And this is a serious buff. So increased the bonus invisibility duration. So it's going to make your invisibility last even longer. The melee regeneration speed that it grants you now increases based on the number of enemies near you. And while you are invisible, your recovery is greatly increased and your weapons reload more quickly. Now, I mean, that's really good for a number of applications, honestly. And it pairs phenomenally well with Bottom Tree Nightstalker, where going invisible using your melee already basically gives you all of these bonuses. And so you're just going to be, as long as they stack, you're just going to be doubling up. Like, your weapons are going to be very fast. Your recovery, very quick.
I think it's going to be hard to motivate people to use this because, you know, in PvP, there's just a million significantly stronger PvP hunter exotics, right? Because this basically forces you to run Nightstalker of some kind, which is also a really weak PvP subclass. And Kevin Yanez has gone on Twitter and said, hey, we're looking at it. It's not going to be season 15, but we know it's really weak. Like, we're gonna help Nightstalker. But for right now, it's a pretty weak subclass. So you pretty much have to run Nightstalker. And even if you were running Nightstalker, like, you're giving up, Dragon Shadow, you're giving up Stompies. In my opinion, you're giving up Frosties. Now, granted, I was already using Graviton Forfeit because it looks awesome and it matched really well with an outfit that I had. And that's how I was using it. But I actually found it useful with just increasing the bonus, the invisibility duration, because people don't expect you to be invisible for that long. You can cover a lot more distance.
Yeah.
Right. So I already found it useful. I'm glad that it's getting this buff. I don't think we're going to see a massive uptick in usage. I expect Bombardiers to, like, day one, their usage is going to, like, go through the roof while people try them out. Graviton Forfeit, I think, like, the two people who are already using it are going to be like, fuck yeah. And almost no one is going to be like, this is my new build. Not in PvP, at least.
Maybe not in PvP. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily underestimate how long, like, how much of the game you could spend invisible if you combo that with, like I said, with Bottom Tree and the melee bonus, because your enemies are going to be around you. And near is one of those words that actually means, like, really not that close.
25 meters away.
Yeah. So in PvP, that's, like, all the time. So you can probably stay invisible all the time. And if you are an ape like me, that sounds pretty appealing, to be honest. This also, I think, is going to have some really strong use cases in PvE for sections that you can speed run through. Rooms that you don't have to clear, you and your whole team can just friggin' skip. And this is going to make it much easier to do that. Not only because you can stay invisible longer, but because you can have much greater melee uptime and all of your allies can benefit from it. So obviously you could run top tree and just use the dodge and probably max out your mobility and just have 100% invisibility for yourself, which is also great. But if you're taking a team with you, then obviously bottom tree is the way to go. So anyway, that's enough about Graviton Forfeit.
Yeah. Lucky Pants, they added an intrinsic hand cannon holster mod. We'll talk about hand cannon holsters in a second, but basically it works like a slow auto loading holster.
Yep.
So whatever type of weapon you choose, it like slowly reloads that weapon as it's stowed.
Practically all we need to say about it.
Yeah. They said replace the previous functionality with the following, but that was actually not correct. Like, it retains the previous functionality of the draw bonus and the accuracy bonus. So that stays there, right? DMG went on Twitter and clarified that is not going away. So looking beyond, you're still going to be great with hand cannons. When you ready a fully loaded hand cannon that deals kinetic damage or damage matching your subclass energy type, for a short time, each hit against a combatant, this is PvE only, he also clarified that on Twitter, PvE only, each hit against a combatant from that hand cannon increases the damage of the next shot. He said, note, Hawk Moon will not be able to one-shot a raid boss, but other hand cannons will get a fun edge in combat, though. This kind of goes along with the presumed hand cannon buff that we're going to be getting in PvE. I mean, I'm glad that they have given a reason to like use these in PvE, because prior to that, they were entirely useless in PvE. And I'm glad that the damage bonus is not in PvP. That would have been an awful, awful experience. I'm not entirely like stoked about the hand cannon holster mod, but
did they confirm that combatant here actually means combatant?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they actually did.
I didn't see this tweet, so I just wanted to make sure. Because sometimes, yeah, you know, combatant is one of those
combatant
words.
Means whatever they want it to mean at the time. But in this case, yes, it does mean PvE.
Okay. Because I was going to say Ace of Spades usage about to, I'm buying stock in that gun, basically.
It's going to be great for people who are using Fatebringer and stuff and PvE content.
Yeah. But. No, this is going to be, it's going to be a nice little bump for PvE. We'll have to see what happens to hand cannons.
One thing I don't like, and I actually didn't think about this because I don't play in-game PvE, but I saw someone comment on it on Reddit, and I thought that it made a lot of sense, is that it sucks that they continually make things that are like damage matching your subclass, because they force match game into so much stuff in in-game PvE that you almost never get to choose damage based on what your subclass is.
Right.
Like, you only ever get to choose damage based on what shields the enemies have. And it's like, that kind of sucks because you're negating like half of the functionality of this perk in in-game PvE.
Yeah, I thought that was an odd choice. That's a change that we're going to be reading a few more times on this TWAB, and I don't know. It felt strange to be leaning into that because it does feel a bit arbitrary. And it does feel like it basically says, well, if the Nightfall has the wrong shield type, then you can't use this exotic and you have to figure out a different strategy, which I guess is, you know, sort of what it is, right? You have sometimes, you know, an exotic or a weapon is the wrong tool for the job. But this feels like it's not the wrong tool for the job because its effect wouldn't help you, but just because you can't use that color of damage. So that feels weird to me, but.
And speaking of that type of effect, when we move on down to Titans, the very first Titan armor that they're changing is Precious Scars, which right now when you revive someone or get a revive, it gives you an overshield, I think.
Correct. Yep.
It's seemed like a really neat idea, is basically entirely useless in actual practice.
You get an overshield and nearby allies also get an overshield.
Right. It's one of those things, and we've talked about this before. It's the same issue with Bottomless Grief and Celerity, right? Like, it activates on a fail state, and most people don't really enjoy perks that activate on a fail state. Like, I feel like the fantasy here is like you're doing a carry and the person who gets killed can still provide some help just by being killed and being revived, right? Or just by reviving someone. And practice doesn't end up really being a ton of fun. So now it creates a burst of healing and bonus recovery around you whenever you kill an enemy, but it's with the damage type that matches your subclass type.
Yeah.
So again, it's like, you know, whatever, it is what it is. Like, I'll use my Glacioclasm and my Sentinel Titan. But at the same time, like, it's still just kind of, to me, a frustrating and almost arbitrary limitation.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree. It just feels a little... it feels like an odd choice to lean into that so hard, because it's not... I don't know. I guess that I don't feel like that's a mechanic that's been used a whole lot and doesn't... I don't know. Anyway, I don't want to keep harping on it. I have to say that the Precious Scars change is a lot less exciting than the changes that we saw for the Hunter Exotics. So that's, I mean, it's good. It makes it much more useful than it was, but it sort of sours because you do have to match the subclass type with your weapon damage type. So anyway.
And Icefall Mantle, which is the one where it replaces your barricade with a personal overshield that you get. However, once you activate it previously, you are slowed down and your barricade does not recharge. They have removed the slower class ability recharge scaler, which is nice and helpful. But honestly, the thing that sucks about it is like the being slowed down when you pop that overshield. Like, even though you have an overshield, you basically become a sitting target. And so I'm not entirely sure that it's going to be enough to make it really useful. But at the same time, it's like the entire idea is broken as fuck anyways. Because if you weren't slowed down and you could just pop a personal overshield whenever you wanted, it's like that's kind of broken on its own.
Yeah.
So, it's like, well, I'm not entirely sure how you make it have that power fantasy without potentially making it incredibly broken and trials and competitive and stuff. But we'll see. I'll give it a shot.
I think it's something that you just have to be ready to embrace a passive playstyle, and you're using the overshield either to survive somebody aping you, or you're popping it whenever you can and then just letting it soak up damage while you get kills.
So, you know what I thought would be fun, but it kind of goes against the way you play it, is like you use it with Sweet Business, right? And you just like pop it and just walk around the corner with Sweet Business, just like spun up, and you're just like, this is... bring it on. Like, that's, I'm a walking tank at this point.
That's the way right there.
Yeah. And then moving on down to the Warlocks. The Titans really kind of got a little bit shafted on this. They didn't get anything excited. The Warlocks got a little bit more. Verity's Brow. The trigger now triggers when you get a weapon kill that matches your subclass energy type. So no longer on just void only. Now has to match your subclass energy type, which is nice if you... are into that kind of thing. Again, in in-game PvE, it's kind of a little bit frustrating and limiting. But then they also increased the grenade damage bonus to 20% per stack, up from 10% per stack. And I think you did the math on this earlier. It's a pretty substantial buff, though.
It is. So previously, the bonus here is called Death Throes. It can stack up to 5 times for a 50% damage bonus previously. Now a 100% damage bonus. It also stacks with, I think it's Chaos Accelerant, if I'm remembering the ability's name correctly. I had it up, and then we started talking about this stuff. Anyway, it stacks with a top tree Voidwalker ability. I believe it's Chaos Accelerant, which also grants you a 25% damage buff. And since those stack, that... you know, multiplies them, and you end up with a 250% stronger grenade throw. That also gives nearby allies increased grenade regeneration for a short time. So, that's not bad. That's a grenade that's probably going to, you know, do a lot of damage to a boss, and all you have to do is clean up a few adds to get to it. Can also be great for taking down a champion or a major. Or a mini boss, so really a pretty strong ability. I think Death Throes actually also grants increased grenade recharge to you. So just all told, super, super strong. If you have a void weapon with... boy, I just totally drew a blank on the perk's name. Shoot. Not Grenadier. I know one of the guns I have it on. I can look. Demolitionist. I knew it was not Grenadier. So it's Demolitionist. Yeah, I think if you have a void weapon with Demolitionist, you could probably throw some pretty badass grenades. I think Shax would be proud. So that's a change that I think is awesome. I love
what's the other what's grenades. That other grenade perk, the one that's new?
I don't know.
It's the other it's the one where you get God, see, now we suck at this. I don't ever use this perk because I think it's a trash perk for PvP, which absolutely is. But it's the one where if you get grenade kills, it boosts your weapon damage.
Adrenaline Junkie. That's the one.
Yeah, you could also use it with Adrenaline Junkie for a little bit of that. Get a bunch of kills with a superpower grenade and then boost your damage and PvE. I think that could be pretty fun, too.
Yeah, that'd be a nice back and forth, both buffing each other up. That'd be a great combo.
Yeah, and then, again, what it is to me is it's like, when you look at the triggering on weapon kills that match your subclass energy type, what it means to me is like I am almost unlikely to build into it and more likely to just like use it when the stars align. Like I don't really like being told like you have to use a gun of a different energy type to get this perk to work. Because like I want to use the gun that I want to use, right? And so what ends up happening with perks like this is that when I happen to be using a gun that matches my subclass, like the gun is the priority and the subclass is basically fixed. And then it's like, well, then I'm allowed to use this exotic. And that might just be me. I don't know that everyone plays that way, but that's the way these come off to me. And it's kind of the reason why I don't like that type of thing. Because it almost by default makes the exotic like a secondary choice for me, as opposed to me being like, I want to use this exotic. It's like, oh, I can't because I'm using a fusion rifle that's not stasis because I don't have a stasis fusion rifle and nobody does. So it's like, oh, great. Cool.
Yeah, it definitely is something that will require building into intentionally. But, you know, we talked about the Titans getting shafted, about not liking perks that trigger on fail states. Let's talk about the Stag. Bungie is trying to make these fail state exotics have some appeal. The Stag now grants damage reduction to allied guardians standing in your rifts, 25% against combatants, 15% against players. Will that convince you to use it?
Well, I actually already use the Stag.
What?
Now, the reason being is because I have my Middle Tree Dawnblade or my Well of Radiance Dawnblade with Ariana's Vow. And I need empowering rifts like all the time to make that work. So I actually use the Stag on that because it turns out that critically wounded happens like every engagement in PvP. So I can pretty much chain rifts like indefinitely if I use the Stag. So I actually do use it for that. So for me, it's like, oh, this is great. Like, this is literally just going to make what I'm doing better. Like, there's no downside for me using these now. And there wasn't really a downside before. That being said, that's an incredibly niche build that I'm doing that for. And I don't believe that it's going to be, I don't believe that it's going to be something that takes off and gets widely adopted. So I'm not entirely sure that that a 15% damage reduction, you're already so incredibly punished for standing in a rift in PvP. And PvE, this is a pretty great change.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Especially for in-game content where you take so much damage from normal combatants, right? And you're critically wounded so often. In PvP, though, it's like, well, it already sucks to stand in a rift. Like, standing in a rift, if you're not behind cover, is pretty much a death sentence in PvP. So yeah, I guess you can place a rift behind cover and start your recovery faster and also have a little bit of damage resistance. So like if someone throws a grenade or something, like it doesn't just automatically kill you. But again, such a niche thing that I don't see a use in PvP, but PvE, I got to think that a lot more people are going to be like, yeah, you know, this might be worth it.
Yeah. Yep. So I was really asking you for PvP purposes, and now I've learned about your dirty secrets as a result. But
I used some pretty broken builds, man. I think I was running with Draw Breath the other day, and he was using Boots of the Assembler and Lumina and empowering me when I had Ariana's on. And so I could literally one tap and I didn't have to be stuck in a rift while I was doing it. Like he would place a rift and I would place a rift and then he would stand in his rift and then he would like stand in my rift and he would shoot the Lumina shots to me. And as long as I like stayed within like close eyesight of him, he could like be right behind a corner and in cover completely safe. And I could like stand out in a hallway and just one tap anyone who walked into it. And we played a game against two super, super sweaty Unbrokens that were so angry. It was on Convergence with Waterfall Hallway.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just standing in the hallway, just dominating the hallway. And they tried with sniper rifles. They tried switching to shotguns and pushing. And we ran out of medals and we just absolutely wiped the floor with them. And I was like, oh, man, this is like very, very close to being incredibly broken. Like, this is awesome. You're literally basically invincible. You have a hand cannon that one taps everyone. The biggest problem was finding enough hand cannon ammo to keep one tapping people.
Yeah. I could see that being a real struggle.
I do some gross things with the Warlock is what I'm saying. Gross things with Middle Tree Dawnblade, Well of Radiance. Like there are some insane builds you can do with that stuff. Plus if you use, what's the one that gives you two solar grenades? If you use that with Middle Tree Warlock, you can consume your grenade and give yourself an overshield going into an engagement. So not only, and you have two of them. So not only can you have an empowering rift that allows you to one-shot people, you can consume a grenade, have an overshield in your empowering rift, and one-shot someone with a hand cannon. It is disgusting.
Well, now everyone knows. So I look forward to seeing more people attempting that. I have gotten
to attempt it.
I've gotten a lot of Rift Breaker medals in my time, so
you're not scared. You're saying bring it on.
Yeah, I'll throw a grenade at you and then blend you with my hand cannon. It's still gonna work. It might take two grenades. We'll see. But I think this is a fantastic change that is gonna see the stag get a ton of PvE use, rightly so. So that's exciting. We've talked about the stag. I think enough now. Let's get on to Promethium Spur. So Promethium Spur now has some additional functionality. So while standing in a rift, solar weapon kills give you class ability energy. Since you're in a rift, naturally this is rift energy. I'm not sure why they couldn't just say that, but when your class ability energy, rift energy, is full, solar weapon kills consume that energy and spawn a combination healing slash empowering rift at the target's location.
I'm saying is, what is this going to do with my Ariana's Vow when I already one tap you with my solar Ariana's Vow?
Promethium Spur already, while Daybreak is active, defeating combatants or guardians creates a healing and empowering rift at their location. Just it already does that. You have to have your super active, but I feel like now you can just create like a road out of rifts. If you just like, I really hope that I never run into a team of Promethium Spur Daybreak Warlocks because the floor will be lava for me. Like there will be nowhere safe. My hunter tactics will not work.
It seems like with these changes, they are really, really trying to make rifts happen in PvP.
Yeah.
Like, really. Although at the same time, like imagine this in PvE, right? Where solar weapon kills are extremely easy to come by. And if your class, well, granted, now I guess you can't just chain it over and over and over again, right? Because when your class ability is full, if you get a solar weapon kill, it consumes that ability, right? So you can't just like get unlimited rifts back to back to back.
Right.
But if you run to that rift and continue standing in it and continue using a solar weapon, you can basically recharge your thing and then do it again.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you can just make yourself a little road. A little yellow brick road.
Yeah. Might be a little bit harder to do in PvP than it is going to be in PvE.
Yeah.
And again, in PvE, what sucks is like you're limited to a solar weapon, right? So it's like, well, what shields do the enemies have?
Yeah.
Because if they're anything else and match game is on, you can't use a solar weapon, in which case it's entirely useless.
So. Right. Although, you know, even then, if you drop an Empower and Rift or Daybreak, you might do enough damage that you could still use a solar weapon. Maybe. I don't know. Match game is pretty punishing. So that's that. That's the exotic changes.
Man, you know, this is going to end up being a 2-hour episode. If we, because we are taking our sweet time, apparently.
Yeah.
And we still have to talk about... We still have to talk about scavengers, ammo finders, holsters, warmine cells. Then we have to talk about usage weapons, usage of weapons. And I mean, I suppose we could save usage for next week and talk about it with Chris.
I think right? it might be good to talk about that next week.
Because we also have a shit ton of listener questions we have to get to at the end. So, all right, maybe let's save usage for next week with Chris. We'll go over that. That makes me very sad because now I have to go redo the spreadsheet again. But like, 100th time, and it's very time consuming. But anyways, they talk about ammo finders. They said that their ammo finders are now going to have an increased chance to spawn ammo on kills with primary weapons and a further increased chance with exotic primaries. Scavenger, multiple copies of scavenger mods of the same type no longer stack. I've seen some people saying this isn't enough. I think this is a great change. I do not want to go overboard and absolutely just destroy the special ammo economy as it is, although I do believe that it's not in the healthiest place as it currently stands. I think this is a great first step. With some things we've thought before, like maybe this isn't enough, and it turned out to be more than enough, right? Like DMT. I was a little bit concerned, like maybe that might not be enough of a change. DMT has fallen off the face of the earth, right? I think this is going to have a bigger effect than people think it's going to have. So I'm very happy to see it. And this is someone who has run double scavengers almost exclusively because I don't need traction. So...
Yeah.
Shit, I run double rocket launcher scavengers when I'm using two primaries, right? Like, I think this is a really good change.
I agree. I think this is the change to do. I am very happy to wait and see if it is enough. I think it'll be noticeable. I typically only run a single scav because I got addicted to traction a long time ago and I couldn't stop using it. And here we are. So I'm just happy to see everyone else brought down to my level because it gives me a much better chance to win. I hope that ammo finders do work better though for PvE, because I would hate to see PvE suffer as a result. And I know that's going to be the concern that a lot of people have, is that PvP is broken, so PvE gets nerfed. Hopefully there's been enough in the way of PvE buffs in this patch that the ammo economy changes won't be too damaging. But I think it really will come down ultimately to, do ammo finders actually work better? So we'll see. Holsters are the new type of leg armor mod that will gradually reload stowed weapons of the matching type over time. So this will include basically, I'm not going to list off all the types it includes. I'll just say what it does not include. It will not include rocket launchers, breech loaded grenade launchers, or bows, or Ariana's Vow specifically. So hand cannons are in, Ariana's Vow doesn't count.
Yeah, because if it reloaded those, then auto-loading holster would be entirely useless, right?
Yeah.
Thank God it does not help breech loaded grenade launchers. That would be the last thing that I want, is something else that makes breech loaded grenade launchers even easier. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I'm not going to use it. I think that's way more for PvE than it is for PvP. It can be helpful in PvP, don't get me wrong, right? But when I'm on like my fusions, when I'm prioritizing stuff like Slideshot and Slideways already, it's going to be less helpful for me. But again, if it helps PvE, I am all for, you know,
yeah,
allowing people to have a little bit more fun in PvE.
Well, we talked about there have been a lot of PvE buffs. There have also been some PvE nerfs. And Warmind Cells just got kicked in the pants. Now, in fairness, they have been incredibly friggin' powerful for a very long time. Obviously, when Bungie brought them out, and they say this in the TWAB, they were expecting them to be sunset after about a year. And so they felt like, hey, we can make these super strong. It'll be fine because we won't have to worry about them a year from now. Famous last words being what they are, they have to worry about them. So base Warmind Cells, the radius of the explosion or effect has been reduced from 10 meters to 6 meters. The damage of the explosion has been reduced from 200 to 400 damage down to 50 to 250. Ouch. Global Reach, which is just effectively a mandatory mod for using Warmind Cells, it adds a huge amount of radius. It was adding 20 meters, giving you a total range of 30 meters for your effects and explosions. That has been reduced to 10, which means the maximum range is now 16 meters, nearly a 50% decrease. They also increased the mod cost of Global Reach from 1 to 3, which is going to make me think about where I put it a little bit harder, if I even continue to use Warmind Cells, which is up for debate. Cellular suppression. So they reduced the duration of the suppressing effect from 3 seconds to 2 seconds. So not, I mean, you know, it's a 33% nerf, but what's a second here or there? That's honestly the least of the changes. And then Wrath of Rasputin, which was a very, very nice buff, was adding bonus solar damage to the explosions of Warmind Cells. It was adding 100 to 200. Now it is adding 25 to 100. So again, oof, that's a big, big chop off the top right there. So takeaways, Warmind Cells do a lot less damage at half the range. And yeah, that's really going to make the decision to use them cost a little bit more versus things like Charged with Light. And I feel like Charged with Light
wells.
Is an elemental wells. Yeah. Do you want to take the changes to wells there?
No, I'm going to go ahead and let you keep rolling with the PvE
right.
stuff.
All right, so they have buffed 2 Elemental Well mods. Elemental Armaments now has an increased chance to spawn an Elemental Well based on the tier of the enemy defeated. So that spawns a well when you get a weapon kill. Font of Might's base duration has been increased to 10 seconds. And the damage bonus increased from 10% to 25%. And I don't remember for the life of me what that one does at the moment, but
never used elemental wells in my entire career playing Destiny 2. So
yeah,
but also, you know, I ignored Charge of Light for a long time too, and then discovered it, and now I run Charge of Light in every single one of my builds. So
yeah, I mean, I feel like wells were an interesting idea that didn't really take off, in no small part because Warmind Cells are incredibly powerful and Charge with Light also pretty darn good. And wells just were not either of those things. So they're going to have a lot more room to breathe with Warmind Cells taking a big old dump. So we'll see if it's enough. Yeah.
Yep. And in addition to that, they are bringing us new Iron Banner armor for the first time. I'm not a huge fan of anything really like waist down. I don't really like any of the ropes and shit that are hanging off of it. But I really like the helmets. I like the chest pieces, some of the arm. So still excited. New armor, right? Haven't had new armor in Iron Banner in a long time. Almost more importantly, they're bringing us a sidearm and a pulse rifle. I'm really hoping the pulse rifle is a high impact pulse rifle. I would love something that I could replace my messenger with, or that maybe gives me more options than my messenger does. But we'll have to see how it goes. That's pretty much it for the TWAP. I'm amazed that we managed to drag that out for well over an hour. Not well over, I should say, but almost an hour and 10 minutes. And I think it's probably about time that we get to some podcast questions.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair to say.
We promised that we would talk about crossplay stuff, I think, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, and
let's
and
do
we're
it.
Just now getting to it. So, yeah. Stadia will be put with consoles and crossplay for PvP. Do you feel this is the right choice? This is from Super Say. He is a patron, by the way. Yeah, I mean, Stadia is only like 1,000 people at any given time, so it's not going to make a difference one way or the other. But I feel like because there's no cheaters, the experience is more akin to console.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that an influx of 1,000 players using mouse and keyboard and not using it particularly well because there's delay, like input delay, are going to negatively affect console that much. But shifting those players into the PC pool would pretty much ruin it for Stadia. Like it would effectively kill Stadia.
Yeah.
If you put Stadia in with PC. So I think it has to be done that way.
Yeah. And there's just, you know, for people who are, I guess, unclear on how Stadia works, when you are playing Stadia with the Stadia controller, the controller itself is connecting directly back to the Stadia servers. It is not going through your machine first. And so the input lag is very minimal. When you are playing Stadia with a mouse and keyboard, it is running through your machine first, then talking to Stadia. The input lag is fucking significant. Now, and someone on Twitter, you know, pointed this out to me, and this is a self-selecting group of people who would choose to play Destiny on Stadia. So having gigabit fiber, probably much more likely for those people who are still playing Destiny on Stadia. That is probably what you need in order to make the input lag bearable. That said, I still just cannot see it as being comparable to playing natively on PC or playing on console, because you're still running from your machine to another server before the input could be accepted. You don't have that localized control over your character. So it's just not, it's not a match for PC. So I think this is the right move, just for purely from a technical standpoint. Also, though, what you said. Anyway, I'm done.
You're the only one here who has experience on Stadia, so you're the expert on it. But Medic FMF says, how will crossplay affect matchmaking in PvP? Stadia, Xbox, PS, old gen, new gen, all in the same pool. I would hope so. I really think that it's about time that you put old gen consoles and new gen consoles in the same pool. It's like pretty frustrating to have such an incredibly limited player pool to play with on new gen. So I hope that that's the case. I know that old gen players will be at a disadvantage, but it's not. I've already experienced it playing with friends who are on the old gen consoles when it matches the two things together. And it's a disadvantage to be sure, but it's not a game breaking one like it potentially could be. I really think it's just about time. Like, more and more players are getting new consoles every day. Like, you can only be beholden to the old consoles for so long, and it's already been a pretty long time, in my opinion.
You know, as soon as the price of a PS5 drops below a kidney, I will probably consider going that direction. Although I gotta be honest, I'm still debating if I should join the dark side and go Xbox, but I have people on PlayStation. I don't know what to do.
Abandon them. Join Xbox. Join the dark side. Remember, when you go over to the dark side, your previous self dies and you are reborn. You can give yourself a new name and everything.
The biggest thing holding me back is that I would then have to relearn an Xbox controller.
Oh, it's so easy. It's way more intuitive than the PlayStation controller is, to be honest. But we don't need to go there. We don't need to start the console wars on this podcast. But T-Dot says, a third of Trials players go flawless on Stadia. This is pretty laughable compared to other platforms right now, but how does it compare to D1? What would be a good number for the health of players? I honestly don't know what percent of players went flawless in D1 off the top of my head. I think I'd have to go digging back through Trials reports, and if I'd thought about it, I maybe could have prepared something. But what would be a good number for the health of the playlist? I don't think that there needs to be a set number of like X percent of players go flawless every single week. I think what is more important than the percent of players that actually goes flawless is the belief of any player going into the playlist that they could go flawless.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think it necessarily matters if 10% of players go flawless, but the other 90% believe they could have gone flawless. That will keep them coming back. Right. So that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah, I 100% agree. That's what we've been saying, I think, for years now, is that Bungie is not structuring that playlist in a way that encourages hope. And hope is what it needs now more than ever.
Russian05 says, a lot of people talk about the movement skill gap. Merc loves to bring it up on Twitter and dunk on people about it, but I'm not really sure I understand what that phrase means. Are we saying Destiny movement isn't tough to get a handle on, and people that are good at moving don't have a big advantage? Can you explain what this phrase actually means? So movement skill gap is the amount. So if you have two players of equal gun skill, right, and one of them has extraordinarily good movement and one of them has average movement, right, the amount that the player with extraordinarily great movement has an advantage over the player with average movement, like, that's really what I think of when I think of the movement skill gap, right?
Right.
And Destiny absolutely does have a movement skill gap. It 100% does. What I usually am making fun of when I'm making fun of people who say movement is a skill gap is the fact that they think that using stompies or sliding is a movement skill gap. And that is not. Because that is the most base form of movement that exists outside of just walking or running in a straight line, right? Like, jumping and sliding are the two, and I said this the other day on Twitter, but they're like baby's first strategies in PvP. Like, that is not the movement skill gap. There is a movement skill gap in Destiny. It is not stompy jumping, and it is not sliding with cryoclasm, or even just sliding with a shotgun. Like, that's not the movement skill gap. The movement skill gap is positioning. The movement skill gap is taking the most efficient routes and getting places quickly. The movement skill gap is understanding wind and how aggressively to push. The movement skill gap is flanking. The movement skill gap is strafing. Those things are a movement skill gap, right? Those things differentiate an excellent player from an average player. The things like stompy jumping and sliding, average players are doing those, right? Like, yeah, you might be better than the worst player in the game if you can stompy jump or slide, but almost everyone who is even borderline competent at Destiny 2 can stompy jump and slide. That is not a movement skill gap, right? Now, Titan skating in D1, where people could get across the map in like a half second and could be there way faster, that was a little bit of a movement skill gap. You know, that took a little something to do. It wasn't tremendously high. But when I think of movement skill gap, I think of, how are you getting to a lane? How are you getting to an angle before someone else? How are you flanking someone in such a way that they don't expect it? How are you strafing in such a way that you throw someone's aim off and make them miss, right? How are you feinting on someone or faking them out? Like, all these other things that are more positioning and knowledge base, those things are the real movement skill gap to me. When the best players that I play in trials and competitive, they're not stompy jumping over my head and spamming hand cannon shots. They're not slide shotgunning me. They're closing gaps so quickly that you don't have time to react to them pushing you. Or they are appearing from angles where you would never expect them to be. Or they are flanking in ways you would never expect them to flank. That is what a movement skill gap is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you really summed that up thoroughly. So I don't think I have anything particular to add. The only thing I would say that maybe in addition to that is that developing like higher movement skill, one of the things that kind of goes hand in hand with that is developing your map knowledge, and actually memorizing those routes and understanding, because it's not just about what you do, but it's also about understanding and anticipating what other people do based on the play styles that they're demonstrating. So if a team is just constantly aping you in groups, then you have to anticipate that, expect them to be, you know, when you go to cap a point in control, expect that, okay, three of them are about to come at me from three different directions. And then you go and you stand somewhere else and you throw your super at them, right? That's a movement skill gap. You let them come to you. And so it's also about understanding what lanes do people like to use. Where do people like to go when they want to close the gap to shotgun? Where do people like to go when they want to snipe? And how do I work around those people? Are people doing that in this match? And how do I work around them? So that would be the only thing I would add, is it's about you, but then it's also about seeing what the other player is going to do before they do it.
And to clarify, people are like, oh, well, isn't that like positioning? Well, it's like, yeah, those two things go hand in hand, right? But Destiny isn't a game like Halo. It would be about positioning, because once you get to some place, you are defending that point on the map, right? Like, that's a lot of times how Halo was played. You got to a power position on the map and then you defended that position, right? But the movement, once you were there, was basically relegated to strafing and using cover. And that was pretty much it. In Destiny, it's a lot different, right? Like in Destiny, because we don't pick up ammo on the map with the exception of heavy ammo, and because we have almost no objective gameplays, like getting to a defendable position or strong position on the map isn't necessarily enough to win you a game, because people can just avoid it if they want to. There's nothing forcing them to go there. There's nothing funneling them to go there. So you constantly have to move, right? And I think the second thing that confuses people is that a lot of people mistake skill gap to be like the gap between the best player in the game and the worst player in the game. And that's entirely meaningless. Like, it really doesn't matter, you know, because the worst player in the game is always going to be unbelievable garbage, and the best player in the game is always going to be incredibly good. So the gap between them might as well be infinite, because in any game where there is a skill gap, like, you comparing the best to the worst does nothing. What you need to be doing is you need to be comparing very good players to average players. And that's the gap that you actually need to be addressing, right? Is how wide is the gulf between a 50% player, like the average player who plays the game, and some of the really, really good players who are out there? That's the gap that actually matters. And so a lot of people are like, oh, well, I'm slide shotgunning. That's a skill gap. Yeah, it is, between you and the worst player in the game. That's meaningless, right? That's absolutely entirely meaningless, because all it takes is them playing 10 games and they're going to figure out what you know. That's not a skill gap. The skill gap is what happens when you play 1,000 games and you really understand the intricacies of the game. You really understand what makes someone great or makes someone not great. Like, a lot of, I don't use stompies, right? I don't slide shotgun. I think my actual strengths, perhaps more so than my aim, is that I have really good positioning and really good movement awareness of what I'm doing with my character, right? Like, I am able to turn engagements against multiple people. I'm able to work these people in such a way that I engage them one by one by one, right? With my movement. That's not me stomping, jumping over their head. That's not me slide shotgunning towards the first person and then dying to the second, right? It's me understanding, okay, there's multiple enemies behind this wall. If I move in such a way that only one of them can see me at a time, I have a better chance of winning, right? Or if I move myself in such a way that when the first person walks around the corner, he's looking at a place where I'm not, that gives me an advantage to potentially take less damage, which then improves my chances on this. It's stuff like that, right? There is a movement skill gap, don't get me wrong. Movement is a skill gap in every damn game, just like aiming is a skill gap. But slide shotgunning is not a movement skill gap.
All right. Well, I think that is it for questions. So that probably should bring us to a solid ending to this episode.
You know, what time is it right now? 12:36. Yeah. I kind of don't want to save the usage numbers for Chris next week, because I feel like we're gonna have so much to talk about that I'm almost like, we're not going to have time for it. And I want to address it before the season ends. So I think maybe we just real quickly go over like the final summation.
All right. We can do that. We can sum up.
We might as well. Right. So long story short, we took numbers from June 26th and we looked at them on July 15th, which was the first time we did one of these, and we saw how things had changed. Now what we want to do is we want to compare the numbers from June 26th to what we have now. These are actually from a couple days ago, August 11th, but it's basically, or August 12th, but it's basically the same thing. Basically what we've seen is kind of hilariously here. Phil Winter's Lie is still the number one used gun. Just significantly less than it was before. The usage was 7% before, the kills were 6.78%. The usage is now down to 4.5%. The kills are about 4.4%. So the usage has fallen off precipitously, as have the kills. But it's still the number one most used gun. This is, again, in comp and trials, 7-day rolling average. That's absolutely hilarious to me. When you look at actual like classes of weapons, shotguns actually didn't go down really that much at all. They were 19.36% of the top 100. They were 19.36% usage out of the guns that were in the top 100. Now they're 18.99% usage out of the guns that are in the top 100. Chaperone has obviously climbed up a lot. Duality has climbed up a lot. Reese Walker and Found Verdict are basically sitting exactly where they started. Now their usage has gone down, but they're sitting exactly where they started ranking wise. You know, the big losers have been Toil and Trouble and Astral Horizon.
Yeah.
But everything else, Lord of Wolves has gone up a lot. Slugshotty's First and Last Out has gone up a bit. You know, shotguns really, some of the aggressives got hit pretty hard in terms of usage, but almost immediately, like the drop from Fellwinter's Lie, that drop is almost one for one negated by Chaperone's increase, right? It's literally like people just were like, okay, I'm done with Fellwinter's. What's the next strongest thing? Chaperone? Done. And they just like went one for one to that gun.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, in terms of the weapon class as a whole, it didn't meaningfully change the usage. But what it did do is it spread that usage out across more weapons. Which I think is a good thing. It's never healthy when too many people are constantly seeing the same gun in their kill feeds. So this is a positive sign.
Yeah. And then the next, obviously, meta change, hand cannons. Hand cannon usage actually did come down. They were at 29% before. Now they're about 27.5%. A 1.5% decrease is actually pretty substantial for a weapon. But really what it was is it was almost entirely the 120 is just tumbling out of the most used weapons. I mean, when you look at the weapons that are most hurt, Sturm dropped 73 slots. Bottom Dollar dropped 47. True Prophecy dropped 46. Igneous Hammer Adept dropped 36. The normal Igneous Hammer dropped 25. Steady Hand dropped 25.
Yeah.
Every 120 hand cannon almost across the board just plummeted down the list. But then taking their place was the 140s, man. Ace of Spades, up from 1.8% usage to 4.5%.
Palindrome. Yeah.
Up from 0.38% usage to 3.8%. The Last Word is up. Crimson is up. The Adept, or the Time Lost Fatebringer, didn't even exist, and it's now the 10th most used weapon, right? Thorn is up. Dire Promise is up. Normal Palindrome went from 71 to 17. Like, literally, it was almost a one-for-one of people abandoning 120s and going straight to 140s. Now, there were a couple winners here. And we were looking at the winners before, and we were not really surprised, but the primaries. But submachine guns went from only 2% usage to now over 3% usage, 3.1% usage. That is a huge, huge increase for submachine guns. I mean, I'm really, really impressed with that. We have Shiura's Wrath, Multimach, Ikelos, Risk Runner, all at or near the top 50. And we even have the Huckleberry coming in at 90 now, whereas it was previously unranked.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot more SMGs. And honestly, like I'm noticing it too. I actually see SMGs getting play in matches now. Whereas before it was really an extreme novelty. But now it's getting to be a fairly regular occurrence. And Shire is definitely making up one of the names that I recognize quite a bit. So,
and the second winner for primaries was Pulse Rifles. They're up from 4.3% to 5.4%, which is a good substantial raise for them. Messenger is up a good bit. Vigilance Wing is not up a ton, but it is up. No Time to Explain is up a fair amount. Grid Skipper has actually kind of fallen down a little bit, which I'm surprised with. Time Worn Spire, on the other hand, has climbed, which is weird because like, those guns are almost kind of one and the same. Cold Denial is pretty much sitting flat. And then Stars and Shadow creeping its way back up just a little bit. But, you know, on the whole, you have seven guns that have gained in usage and only one that has decreased, and the one that decreased barely decreased at all. So you've got a net positive. Pulse Rifles, probably the second biggest winner behind SMGs with these meta changes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's not hard to see why. As some people migrate away from hand cannons, people who maybe were enjoying some of that kind of longer mid-range play are going to look to pulse rifles, which have long been native to that range. And now that the high-impact hand cannons don't just destroy them, they are actually pretty decent.
Yeah. And the other big winner for this was in special weapons. It's not actually really a big winner. It's less than 1% increase. So fusion rifles were at 4.75% usage. Now they're at 5.6. So not a big increase, but I think this is probably the highest fusion rifle usage has been in quite a long time. The big winner is Bastion is a big winner. Probably going to be in line for a nerf just based on how much people are complaining about it. And the usage numbers, it is probably as high as it's ever been. You know, actually, I don't know that that's true, but it's pretty high up there. It's the most used fusion. Jotun sitting basically flat. Telesto has actually climbed a bit. Glacioclasm's pretty much flat. The Adept Plug 1 and the Exile's Curse are the two ones that are really driving this increase. The Adept Plug 1 is sitting at 50. The Exile's Curse is sitting at 71, but both have seen their usage more than double, in some cases nearly triple. So that's really, really huge. I mean, fusions were obviously going to be a winner with shotguns getting nerfed. But I don't think it's as much as people were maybe expecting it to be.
Yeah.
We're still seeing shotguns sitting at 19% usage and fusions just a little over 5.5%. It's not quite like it's close.
Yeah, I would say this has probably been a smaller bump to fusions than I might have thought. Speaking of weapons that did not get a whole lot of bump despite fears, grenade launchers are basically flat in usage. We had some winners, some losers, but when you look at it, you realize that the winners are Wither Horde and heavy weapons. And the losers are all of the breech loaded grenade launchers.
Yeah, everybody's out here freaking out about grenade launchers, and they've gone down in usage.
Yeah, if you look at the actual breech loaded ones, the people actually fear in PvE or in PvP, excuse me, much decreased. I think, well, not even much, but for them, it's a pretty significant drop of 0.13%. And yeah, so that's surprising. You know, Wither Horde, the only one of the breech loaded grenade launchers that's going up in rank, it did basically eat that whole shift. So maybe everyone just started using Wither Horde. I don't know. It's a good grenade launcher.
And you know, the other that's what people were worried about. The other thing is DMT has fallen just almost entirely off the map. Yeah, DMT has gone down from 4.2% being the number four most used weapon down to 1.1%, sitting at 23. And really, there aren't a ton of winners for scout rifles. Mida, I will say, has climbed quite a bit. But the decrease from Dead Man's Tale was so significant that scout rifle usage is down almost 3%.
Yeah, and that's from 6%, right? So really, like half as many people are using scout rifles in the Crucible as were before the most recent changes.
Yeah. So if you guys were wondering what the meta is, it's still 100% hand cannon shotgun.
Yeah.
It is just 140 hand cannons, Fellwinter, Chaperone, and that's 100% the meta. You got a little bit more wiggle room with pulse rifles, SMGs, fusions, grenade launchers. The fears of a pandemic of grenade launchers are much overblown.
Indeed. All right. Yeah.
I think that's it. That didn't take too long. That went too
long. No, that was quick. All right. Well, thanks everyone for joining us for yet another episode of Destiny Massive Breakdowns. We'll see you next time.
And we will see you next week when we've got Chris Proctor, the weapons lead at Bungie, on to talk about the Season 15 weapon sandbox changes. Looking forward to it. And then, like Hutch said, we'll see you next week. Bye.
Peace.